Welcome to Module 11. This is another hardware module that we are going to do today. Hopefully we'll get it done all in one go. That's what I'm hoping. Gonna do some calendar looking, and we're going to talk about what we're gonna do for holiday break, because we're gonna go through January, I think, a little bit, because we don't have enough time for all our modules, which is absolutely fine. The first thing is I'm going to tell you that I'm abolishing your task list. What we're going to do is we're going to have three modules due by the holidays. We're going to have 11, 12, and 13 in whatever order you feel like you want to do them. There are a lot of labs in there, so I would get going on those fairly soon. And we'll look at when that last class is so that we can tell you when these things will be due. Any questions on that?
So by when do they need to be?
I have a calendar in front of me.
Oh, do I?
22nd air dies, 21st air dies is the last one before Christmas. Then you've got the 28th, and then you've got the 4th. But before that, you've got... And then before that, you've got the 15th, obviously.
Oh, so we don't have to break if you guys don't want to. Because we're not anywhere near any of the holidays, actually. We can break over the 29th, I think, if you want, but there's no requirement. It's up to you guys. What do you guys?
I don't care.
Anyone
doesn't matter to me.
Like to... Yeah, who feels they want that time off between Christmas and New Year? Do we lecture on the 29th of December?
Well, I'll be out of town probably, but I'll have my laptop with me most likely, so it doesn't make any difference to me.
Does it make any difference to anybody? Does anyone want that time off? We won't be angry at you if you do want that time off. For me, it doesn't matter. I'll be here anyway.
I don't care, but I'm not taking the class, so it doesn't matter for me.
You might be teaching that week, but I know you don't have any special things going on.
I have no life. I'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have a problem with a lecture on the 29th, if you have a problem with a lecture on the 29th, and you don't want to talk about it here, drop us an email or drop IT instructors.
I think someone did have something to say.
Yeah, go ahead, that person, sorry.
I was just going to say, I can take my laptop with me wherever I go and plug in, so it doesn't matter.
It sounds like people want to break
idea.
From... What's that?
We're going to just ask everybody informally, but would anybody be interested in being involved after the end of class and you guys got all your stuff sorted in a very quick sort of podcast interview thing? Because we need a podcast up and we'd love to hear from you guys as to how you found it. Look, it's tacky but effective. Would anybody put their hand up to be in that at some point?
Sure.
No time. Yeah.
Not a problem.
Last year's went up on Christmas. We did it Christmas Eve. There were like four of us, and
we
were
really
bored.
Did.
Thing. Yeah, I can do that.
Out of our mind.
We were just like, let's make a podcast.
God, that was funny.
I'd just like to point out at this point that we honestly have a life. Honestly, you guys might not believe us. We do other things in the academy, we promise. But, you know, it just keeps ticking along in the background.
Especially lately.
We want students to be in the podcast.
Okay. No, that's okay. If you don't want to be in the podcast, you don't have to be.
Would you rather... You'd rather not be in the podcast, or you'd rather not have lecture that day? Which?
Yeah.
I kind of missed what day and exactly the context of the podcast.
Well, we kind of crammed two issues together. Sorry about that. The first issue was, did you guys want to have class on Wednesday the 28th for us? And if not, email. But then Carrie segued on to, we did a podcast about who we are, what we do, and why we think it's cool. And did we want to do another one of those, and who wanted to be a part of it, and we don't know when that's going to be yet.
Okay, so I'm very happy to be part of it if I'm available, and I don't know if I'll be available, and you don't know when it's going to be yet. So you can let me know. I'm happy to be part of it.
Did you have an issue with the class on the 28th? Because, if you don't want to...
No,
have class
not at all. If I'm not working Wednesdays, then I'll be in classes, and I'd love to have a class on the 28th, and if I am, then that sort of messes them all up. So I don't know yet, and I'm happy to have it on the 28th.
Okay, cool. I think we're going to have class that week then. If anyone has an issue with it, please let us know, and we won't have class that day. And if I suddenly have some amazing trip to go on, or Sean does, whoever's teaching, we obviously won't have class that day, but tentatively we're going to have class that day. Your assignment will be due, I think Sean said, the 21st for you guys. Your modules 11, 12, and 13 will be due. Please start working on them. You have like 3 weeks. So if you need help, email us. We'll be happy to help you. Some of those labs are tricky. I think I'm going to make the part 4 of module 12, that data collector stuff, that is now optional. I'll write that down.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because it's awesome, you guys. It is one of the coolest things, if you can get it to work. It's really, really, really neat, and you should totally try it.
It's really geeky.
But
if you like that, if you like that, it's awesome. But it has been the part of the lab that has made some people just want to pull out every hair out of their head. So if you get to part 4 of 12.2.4, which is the big one, and you find that you have trouble with it, then it's optional. You're certainly free to do it. We'll grade you if you do it. But I am liking that idea, because I graded it last time. I'm liking that idea, because that was so hard for people.
If you want help doing it, we'll totally help you do it, too. But put an hour of your time aside, because probably how long it's going to take me to figure out how to do it again. or Sean or somebody.
Pretty much.
We can also do a demo. That's probably not a bad thing. Did we do one that wasn't like everybody talking, though? Like a proper demo where it just rips you through? No, well, that's something to think about.
It's really cool, though, if you guys want to give it a go. It is a really neat, powerful feature of Windows. But it's unbelievably hard to get it. Go ahead, Riley.
Is that just part of 12.2.4, or is it the whole lab?
It's part of 12.2.4.
Just part 4.
Part 4 and 5 are, you don't, 5 you can't do. It's a remote access thing. And you can't do it. You do parts 1, 2, and 3. It says this lab is meant to be done in 5 parts. So there's actually delimiters between the 4 and 5.
Yeah, it says part 1, part 2, part 3.
I'll write that down for you guys, though, as well, in task lists. So yeah.
We should probably put it in the accessibility document as well.
Yeah.
And our new shiny wiki when I get the anti-spam features working.
I mean, unless I have a class that's computer programmers next year, I think I'll keep those two bits optional.
2 bits?
5.4.8 bit.
Oh, the registry bit. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We're ready to start. Any questions on labs or worksheets?
I just have a quick point to make. For anybody who's been living under a rock, NVDA 2011.3 is out. If you all knew that, well and good. If you didn't, you might want to go get it.
I had some trouble finding FAQs and blogs for components that I was trying to do.
What component are you trying to do?
Well, I tried to do portable hard drive. And then I finally gave up because I tried Western Digital and I tried Seagate. And then I went to iPhone 4.
Okay. Blog? Any kind of review of the iPhone 4 will do for that. A review of somebody...
There's iPhone tips and tricks sites out there galore. Actually.
No, well, what about the hard drives? Because that is an interesting one. You'll find if you look at a hard drive manufacturer's site, you're going to find knowledge base articles. You're going to find fixes and tips and stuff for it, but you're not necessarily going to find generally frequently asked questions. The other thing I'd point people at, which is something that a lot of people don't use, is blogsearch.google.com. We'll search just in blogs, and that can be very handy from weeding stuff out from the other search results. I think there is actually a blogs link on the main Google.
That's cool.
But yeah, there are, like, I mean, some hard drive manufacturers don't feel that you need to write a frequently asked questions on a removable hard drive. How hard is it really? Well, you'd be surprised, but they don't think they need one, so it can be tricky to find frequently asked questions on things, because a lot of the time now people either put things in knowledge bases or they get people to review them, because a lot of people don't know what questions to ask for them to be frequently asked. And
a knowledge
answered.
Base is plenty, is just as good, but even better than a frequently asked questions. If you find a knowledge base, that is totally fine. Just note that down.
One of the things that's always been confusing for people is the labs thing is it'll say help site and troubleshooting site as two separate ones. And I don't know what they were on when they did that. I find that particularly confusing, and I know everyone else
yeah.
does too.
I kind of really do know what they're on, but troubleshooting sites are hard to find. They're the step through wizardy things. What's your problem?
Oh dear, okay.
Western Digital has one of them. I know they do. Because the first thing they asked me when I called up their tech support is, you've been through the troubleshooting wizard? I know Western Digital has one.
Okay, good to know.
If you look really hard and can't find something, I can't find one is probably okay. And if I don't believe you, I may sit down and have a 5-minute Google. If I can't find it, then you're good. If you're not, I'll say, no, it's here. Try these search terms.
Okay, thanks.
So, yeah, no, it's, you don't have to, if you can't find something, it's okay. I'll
is that what a troubleshooting site
yeah.
is?
Yeah. I'll have a quick look.
I don't think
through.
I've ever seen one.
Really? I've like seen
that.
Them.
Nor have
common.
I. Not that kind of...
I have.
Like, I've seen
a lot
Windows
of...
Help, but...
A lot of ISPs, I think, have them.
Oh god, you know what I just thought of when Carrie described it? Dude, does anyone remember the what product do you want to download Code Factory software for? That stupid thing? That's
yes, it's like that.
Ugh, I hate that thing.
I saw a troubleshooting site the other day. I'm just trying to remember which one it was. It's like, what issues are you having with... Oh, Ninite has one. If you look on ninite.com, of all places, N-I-N-I-T-E, theirs is sort of a what problem are you having, and you drill down that way. So, I don't think you can do Ninite
cool.
for the... Yeah, but there's one.
No.
Yeah. They can be the most helpful things ever, or they can be the worst pieces of junk, and you just wish that they didn't have them and you could just find a knowledge base, but... Yeah.
Then again, finding which words to key into the knowledge base can be a challenge, because JAWS and problem are going to net you a lot of hits, but are they going to word the problem the same way that you're going to have?
Alright.
Yeah. Sometimes with a knowledge base, you just end up hitting show me all the answers and just plowing through because it's easier
I'll
than
just go
to
look.
Figure out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do that all with right. the DOS TSNs.
For this chapter, you're going to do a lot of pretending. You won't probably be installing RAM. So just look up the information on your RAM. If you aren't able to find the speed of your RAM, don't despair. Just tell us you couldn't find it, because sometimes the only way, unless you know what speed your RAM is to pull it out and look at it. And you guys can't.
You can try something. You can try... there are some memory places... that actually have a thing that'll go and check how much RAM's in your computer, how much you can put in. I'm going to put... there's a memory vendor that's the number 4allmemory.com, and I don't know if they're still... They were around a while back, and you could actually run this little thing, this little ActiveX dealy, and it would look at your computer model and stuff, and it would tell you how much RAM you had, how many slots, and how much you could put in if you could, and how far up you could go.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's the speed. It's the actual speed that's really
yeah,
hard to find.
Yeah, CPU-Z does it.
In a really strange way.
Doesn't CPU-Z do it? It reads the
kind
JEDEC
of.
Chips off the RAM and shows you the
yeah,
speed.
Yeah, kind of. But it shows you the exact speed instead of the nice, rounded manufacturer's speed. So, you can try CPU-Z. It's a JAWS cursor job. CPU-Z is really cool. Another thing that you're going to probably want is Belarc Advisor. B-E-L-A-R-C Advisor. and that will tell you about your RAM, or it's not your RAM, your BIOS versions, and a lot of other useful bits in your for these labs that you'll want. It is a nice HTML web page, a very lovely little web page, and it just you download the program, run it, and it gives you a nice little report of your computer and all its specs and programs and keys.
Use.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it does require table sure, navigation for all of it, but so do all your labs by the look of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it is free for non-commercial use. Don't use it in the business. You're supposed to pay them.
I know. When I first got my netbook, I popped it on there and it gave me a really nice idea of what all was in it.
Yeah, it's a good program. And if you're still unsure of how to use tables, you should probably talk with one of us so that we can take you through that.
Yeah, we'll help you. On the other hand, you would have had quite a bit of difficulty doing your labs up until this point.
Yeah, just a bit. Okay, so this chapter focuses a lot on upgrading customers' hardware. Oh, sorry, go ahead. No? Alright. You may need to help pick out hardware that is compatible with your customers' other hardware, operating systems, and applications. Until this year, the A+ certification was divided into three specialties. These were field, remote, and bench technicians. Most technician jobs fall into one of these three categories, or are a mixture. Most of these are a mixture, honestly. All technicians need the following skills, regardless of what type of technician job they would like to get. Building and upgrading computers, performing installations, installing, configuring, and optimizing software, performing preventative maintenance, troubleshooting and repairing computers, communicating clearly with the customers, and documenting customer feedback and the steps involved in finding the solution to a problem. We're going to talk about these three different types of technicians briefly. Field technicians work repairing computers on site. They need excellent troubleshooting and customer service skills because they are in regular contact with customers. A remote technician may work at a help desk. They need excellent customer service skills because they do not get physical access to a customer's computer. Instead, they must get the customer to understand how to solve the problem unless they use software to remotely access the computer. A bench technician has limited interaction with customers. These are the geeky techs, as Kerry likes to say, the propeller heads of the world. They will usually be doing a large volume of computer repairs in a depot or workshop. Any questions on those three types? Yeah, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it? All right. You have a job lab. It's 11.1. You will notice it is the exact same lab. The only reason you should do this lab, if you want to, it's optional, because you've done it before, basically, is if you want to see how much your research skills have improved. If you do this lab, you'll notice how much easier it is now than when you started. So if you felt like your research skills were shaky, do this lab and see how much easier it is for you to do now. The other thing is that with 11.1, now that you have had modules 1 through 10, people have actually found jobs that they have wanted to apply for and have done so. I can't say anyone has gotten the jobs, one of which is because the guy lost his phone and now actually has a better job. And the other person just didn't, because they didn't live in the country they applied for the job in. But you may find a job that you might like to apply for. So it's an interesting lab to do if you have the time and you want to. All right. Remember, safety is always important. We're going to do a quick review of safety. If you want more, please reread Chapter 2. It's all in here. And I think there's a lot in 11 as well. Alright, general rules. include keep the work area clean and free of clutter. Keep food and drinks out of the work area. Oh, I'm breaking that rule. I'm sure half of you are too. Never open a computer monitor unless you have been properly trained. Remove all jewelry and watches. Make sure that the power is off and that the power plug has been removed completely from the plug. Don't just pull it halfway out of the socket, because that isn't actually going to help. We had a guy fry his computer because he just kind of pulled it out, but he left the plug kind of halfway in, you know. It's not getting power, but he fried his RAM. We couldn't figure out what had happened until a year later, until I actually came to the section and said this, and he's like, oh, that's what I did wrong. So pull it out, set it on the floor. This shouldn't be anywhere near the electrical socket. I kind of thought this was a common sense thing, but I guess not. Do not look into the laser
remember...
beams.
So, no, he was actually saying that if he dropped it onto the floor, it was going to be too hard to pick up because it was down the back of the desk. So he just pulled it out a little way so that it would go in easier later. I remember this story. And it bit him.
Yeah, well, he didn't have a computer. Aww. Poor guy. I'm sitting there the whole year, oh, these things just happen sometimes and you got unlucky. No, you actually didn't. It was totally your fault, and I didn't know.
Yeah.
I felt bad for you for a year. Oh, well. Do not look into the laser beams located in the computer equipment. Laser beams will burn your eyes. Make sure that there is a fire extinguisher and first aid kit available. Question. Does anyone remember the acronym we use on how to use a fire extinguisher?
Besides me, because sadly I do.
Yeah, me too. Okay, that's alright.
That's
kind of what
I thought.
What is it? It's something at base of the flames
it's
or something.
It's pass. It's pass.
Oh, pass.
Pull,
yeah, pull aim, pin, aim, pull, shoot
aim,
at the base
sweep,
of the flame. Yeah.
Volume and sweep.
And sweep,
side
yeah.
to side. You guys weren't supposed to remember that. I was just curious if anyone did.
that would have been
will
really
still
funny
pass.
If the word popped up with it.
All right. Cover sharp edges with tape when working inside the computer case. It probably isn't yours. You don't need to bleed into it to make it your own. Use anti-static mats and pads to reduce the chance of ESD damage to your equipment. Store hazardous or toxic materials in a secure cabinet. Keep the floor clear of anything that might trip someone. Clean work areas on a regular basis. You should use caution when you move computer equipment from one place to another. If you have customers in your workspace, make sure to have them follow the safety rules as well. Explain to them why safety is important. Some people are like, oh, stupid rules. These IT people make so many rules because they're control freaks and power-hungry, horrible people. No, you have to explain why, and that may make them actually want to follow your rules. Make sure you dispose of computer components and cleaners according to your local guidelines, or you may be fined. If you're a person, you know, you might sneak something that shouldn't be into a bin. If you're in a business, you seriously could get fined. I mean, the EPA may be watching you, and so you really don't want to do that in a business setting. There are organizations that determine safety conditions in many countries. Does anyone know what the name is of this organization in America?
Well, you kind of gave it away, didn't you?
OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
There you go. Yep. I think ours is just called Occupational Health and Safety, OHS, in Australia. Always use the right tool for the job. If you need a review of basic tools, visit Chapter 2. Cisco says never use magnetized tools. I really like my magnetized tools. If you have blindy finger trouble, the magnetized tools can actually really help you to not have to have hold of those screws. It will negate some of that blindy finger trouble for you, and you may be a lot better able to use your tools. Don't use them on hard drives, like the inside of hard drives. If you're screwing down a hard drive, you're probably okay. And don't run your magnetic screwdriver all over your motherboard. That's another good thing that you don't do. Cisco says, never use magnetic tools. There are also specialized tools for testing power of hardware devices. Hold on. Skype spammers for the win, or not. Alright. We have a multimeter. A multimeter is a device that measures AC and DC voltage, electrical current, and other cable and electrical characteristics. do we have a multimeter demonstration up now?
I don't believe we officially have one.
We keep thinking about doing one, and we never get to it. You can get talking multimeters and
we
cable testers from the NF.
We did one at the end of one of the lectures, but I don't know if we cut it out. We did actually.
Well, if somebody's bored enough to find it, I'll chop it out, but I'm not looking for it, so I do have
11.
An Olympus and a multimeter. So, yeah, but we've got, like, lots of years of 11, so...
It was last
year. Probably, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll have a poke around. If I can't find it, I've got an Olympus, and I've got a multimeter and lots of batteries and adapters, so we can make that happen again. Somebody remind me.
I also remember talking about recycling. I remember reading that there's apparently we have a national recycling center, and I have a toll-free number in front of me if anyone wants it. Or I could just put it in the chat, I guess. But apparently it says call the recycling center. I'm assuming it's a national number. So there is one.
What was I saying? Yeah, you can get the talking multimeters and a talking network cable tester from the NFB store now, which is pretty cool. I need to get myself one of those talking cable testers at some point when I have money, because it'd be a really neat thing for the Academy and me to have. A power supply tester is a device that checks whether the computer power supply is working properly. A simple power supply tester might just have indicator lights, while more advanced versions show the amount and voltage of an amperage. They can also beep, which is nice. Cable... So, you have a power tester and cable tester lab. You have two 11.22s. You're not doing those. It says in the accessibility document that you need to write a paragraph on how to test cables. There's a demonstration up in the Audio Labs folder of somebody using a cable tester. And you can listen to that and tell us how you might test a cable. And that will be
sufficient. Is it actually
sufficient.
Moving to ITE stuff now? Because it used
to be
the Discovery stuff.
It's in our Audio Labs.
I sim-linked it. I sim-linked it. It's in both sections.
Yeah, that's all done. That was 2 years ago.
Cool.
So, yeah... That's in your accessibility tips document as well. It tells you that. Alright. A cable tester is a device that checks for wiring shorts or faults, such as wires and connected to the wrong pin. That is the one I think you can get from the NFB. Is that right, Rob?
I think Brian was the one who told us about him, actually.
Yeah. A loopback plug is a device that connects to a computer hub, switch, or router port to perform a diagnostic procedure called a loopback test. In a loopback test, a signal is transmitted through a circuit and then returned to the sending device to test the integrity of the data transmission. Alright. What is ESD? Anyone?
Electrostatic discharge.
Electrostatic discharge.
You cut Lynn off.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Her voice was kind of soft, actually.
Yes. Yes, yes, that's okay. You both get to share a virtual lollipop. Yes, electrostatic discharge. Lynn, why is it important to protect against ESD?
So you don't fry your equipment.
Sadly, that cut off. Anyone else?
Even as few as 30 volts can do a lot of damage to equipment.
Absolutely. And you can get a nasty intermittent fault and not know why your computer is breaking itself. What devices should we use to protect against ESD, not Rob?
A wrist strap?
Absolutely. A wrist strap is good. Any other things we can use?
Antistatic mat?
Yes, absolutely. The test says to ground yourself by touching, or before touching a computer. How is this done?
Does it matter who answers now?
No, you can answer.
You touch it to an unpainted part of the case.
Yeah. Is that question in the final, Ollie?
No, it's not.
Really?
It was on the Chapter 2 test, I think.
Okay, you might see that in Chapter 11 again.
Ah, we've tested the final. You've got to tell them that.
Oh, yes! The final is...
Oh, yeah, final.
Yeah. You are, it's okay. sorry. The final's been tested. The final is ready for general consumption. Ali did it yesterday. Did amazing. And it is now everybody else's turn to try their luck. So, email me with times you'd like to take your final, and we'll figure something out. I'm around in the mornings this weekend, I think. I'm around... Am I around tomorrow morning? I can be around tomorrow morning.
Gem is over. Yeah, you can be.
I can be available tomorrow morning, or tomorrow night, your guys' time, if anyone wants that slot. You can do it a few at a time. You can do it one at a time. Doesn't matter. If a couple people want to take it at a certain time, we can do that. I'm available tomorrow night your time. I'm probably available Saturday morning your time, maybe. And Sunday morning, maybe.
Just email a time when it works for you, and if it doesn't work for us or for her, then you can sort it out that way. It's probably the easiest way to do it. If you absolutely have to have the afternoon, our time, I might be able to help, although I'm not a whole lot of use when the exams break, but I can do my best.
Yeah, you can fix it. Or Haytel me once I get my Haytel working.
Yeah.
Okay. Do not open monitors or power supplies unless you are properly trained. You guys probably will never do this. Most of the time, repairing a power supply can be as expensive as just buying a new one, so they're usually just replaced. Never wear an anti-static wrist strap when working with these devices, all that electricity is going to go through you, and it's going to make the shock a whole lot worse than it would have already been. The internal components of a monitor cannot be repaired. what did I write here? But especially certified technician can replace them. That is so expensive, so you're probably going to be buying a new cheap laptop or a new LCD monitor. They are like $99 now. Laser printers can also have high voltage and hot surfaces. Computer parts contain hazardous materials which harm the environment. Make sure to dispose of them properly to avoid this. A computer recycling warehouse is a place where discarded computer equipment can be taken apart. Computer parts that are still usable can be recycled for repairing other equipment. They must adhere to local laws for disposing of waste. Remember that CRT monitors can contain up to 5 pounds of lead. That's a lot of lead. Other dangerous materials found in computers
which is
include...
dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole lot of dangerous. Mercury, cadmium, hexavalent, and chromium. Batteries may contain nickel cadmium.
I think some of those cause cancer, actually.
Yeah, well, they do. You want that in your water supply? Oh, that'll be amazing. Nickel cadmium, nickel metal hydride, lithium ion, and lead. I want to drink all of that so much, so don't. Throw that into the trash, where it can go into the landfill, and get into the water supply eventually, possibly. Yeah, not good for you. Any questions on safety?
And if you don't believe us that batteries are pretty unstable things, you can find exploding laptop battery videos that are very well narrated and kind of interesting and also scary and at the same time.
Yeah, at least you're not in the area. Does everybody kind of have safety?
Absolutely.
A handle on safety?
I think so.
Okay, we'll go on. We're going to talk about replacing computer components. What are some reasons that we might replace computer components?
They quit working.
Yeah, broken. Any other reasons?
Any other reasons?
They need to be updated.
Yeah, I want a bigger hard drive. I want more RAM. Those are usually the two big ones, is I want bigger and better and faster, or it broke. When replacing components, it is important to consider the customer's needs. The first things we will discuss is replacing the power supply for the case. You will need to ask your customer what devices will be inside the computer and what peripherals they plan to connect. Make sure that the case can accommodate the shape of the power supply and the motherboard. Power supplies convert AC input to DC output voltages. They typically provide voltages of 3.3, 5, and 12 volts, and are measured in wattage. Make sure that the power supply you get is powerful enough for all components, and that it has an adequate number of connectors. Add up the wattage of all components and go with a power supply that has 25% more than the total you need. A supply that comes with a case may not meet your requirements, so always make sure to check. As I said, unless you're going like an incredible gaming computer, between 400 and 600 should be plenty for you. Any questions on replacing a power supply? Yeah, John.
Do power supplies often have the existing wattage written on them? See if you're replacing one, could some a sighted person look at it and tell you what the current one is?
Certainly
yeah,
do.
I think so.
No, they usually do. Usually got the watts written very clearly. And then they also have the output voltages and amperages if you really want to go back to Ohm's Law in Chapter 1. But yes, usually the wattage is written as a number, so you don't have to go to that bother.
Have I told this class my power supply goes boom story yet?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I won't again. Next we'll talk about replacing the motherboard. You may want to do this for improved functionality. Make sure your motherboard fits your case and is compatible with your old CPU, memory, adapter cards, and has the appropriate types and number of connectors and expansion slots. Also, make sure that the motherboard has enough RAM slots and can accommodate the amount of memory you want to use. The chipset establishes how much memory can be added to a motherboard and the type of connectors on the motherboard. When building a computer, choose a chipset that provides the capabilities that you need. The chipset is on the motherboard. You can read all about it when you look at the motherboard. There we go. Data travels from one part of a computer to another through a collection of wires known as the bus, which has two parts. The data bus carries data between components of a computer. The address bus carries the memory addresses of the locations where data is read or written by the CPU. The bus size refers to the width of the bus. This determines how much data can travel at once. What are the two modern bus sizes? Anybody know?
32-bit and 64-bit.
You're right. Good job. Speed at which data travels through the bus is determined by the clock speed, measured in megahertz or gigahertz. Any questions on replacing a motherboard?
One kind of question, is there any kind of rule of thumb as to whether CPUs or motherboards are likely to last longer, or is that completely random, or do they kind of tend to last around the same time on average?
Well, the motherboard is only going to last as long as the capacitors do. Yeah, it really depends. A lot of people will say a lot of different things, and what they've had good luck with, and everybody kind of agrees differently. Read reviews on the motherboards and go with one that's 4 or 5 stars.
But a good quality motherboard, is it likely to last as long as the CPU and vice versa, say on average, I guess is my point. Let's say you install them both new and they're both, high quality.
In my experience, what about you, Carrie?
There is no rules as far as what lasts longer. It depends on which batch of capacitors, how well they came out, how good the components are, which brand of board, which person in Taiwan loaded it onto the packing cart, which phase of the moon. You basically have to go on user opinion and reliability estimates and stuff that you've seen sort of out in the industry.
Okay, let me put this a slightly different way. It probably, if someone has, say, a 3, 4, 5-year-old computer, and would it be a good idea to upgrade a motherboard without going on and considering upgrading the CPU? Because they probably don't have exactly a state-of-the-art CPU either. I mean, is that a good investment?
No, you'd probably just build them a new computer.
That's what I would generally think. I'm saying unless something is really defective on the motherboard, upgrading the motherboard is maybe not a very likely thing to do compared to upgrading anything else. Is that
if your computer was like a year old and your motherboard blew out,
might do okay.
it.
Yeah, okay. That I see. But other than that type of situation, it's more than a couple of years.
If it's more than a couple of years old, the socket technology's changed and the CPU technology's changed. So unless you're on a specific budget and you're looking at very limited spending resources, and this often is a consideration, you might not even be able to find a motherboard or CPU that will be suitable for what they had, or it will be more expensive to do so. However, there are times when it is perfectly acceptable to simply upgrade the CPU. But there's been so many changes in CPUs, there's no guarantee that the system board that they've got will still support the CPU or vice versa. So, upgrader beware.
Yeah, I noticed that looking at the first parts lab, the very first parts lab, I guess, that, finding reasonably priced CPUs for the LGA 775, it's like they're more expensive than a lot more powerful CPUs that are out for the newer socket, which I can't remember the number off the top of my head.
Absolutely.
Oh, I do too know why. All right, never mind. You may replace the CPU if it fails or is not fast enough to meet your customer's needs. Make sure that your motherboard supports the new CPU. You will need to make sure it uses the same socket as the motherboard, as Bert was talking, and that the BIOS supports it. If the BIOS does not, you may be able to upgrade it, but not always. You may also need a new heatsink/fan assembly, because the faster processors produce more heat. And if the processor gets too hot, they begin to have problems. A great place to find out about compatibility is the manufacturer's website. What is the measurement used for processor speed?
Anyone?
Megahertz or gigahertz?
Yeah, absolutely. Good job. It's gigahertz usually now. Any questions on multi-core processors? Do we all understand what multi-core processors are?
Just curious if I'm still on the way.
No, we can hear you. Alright, we all understand what that is. Any questions on cache?
Is everybody still awake? Like, we don't seem to be getting a lot of response back here. Has everybody zone drifted off?
Hey, did somebody say cash? I could use some.
No, she said cash, I'm afraid.
Stop picking on my accent. A lot of my modules that I'm doing are actually, the last modules are this kind of question and answer type of thing, getting you ready for tests and finals and seeing, making sure that you understand the key concepts from the modules before. So you expect this. I don't think Sean's is quite like that for module 12, but I know the rest of mine are.
Honestly, when I was putting that module 12 together last term, there wasn't time to put in questions. I was trying, we were really short on time, and I was trying to get the whole module 12, and for those of you who've read module 12, and
yeah,
how huge it is, into one night, and I actually did it.
You did do it. That was impressive.
I was so happy with myself. Anyway.
All right, so no questions on cache. We'll go on. The front side bus, or FSB, is the path between the CPU and various components such as the chipset, expansion cards, and the RAM. Data can travel in both directions across the FSB. The frequency of the bus is measured in megahertz or MHz. The frequency at which a CPU operates is determined by applying a clock multiplier to the FSB speed. For example, a processor running at 3200 MHz might be using a 400 MHz FSB. 3200 MHz divided by 400 MHz is 8. In this example, the CPU is 8 times faster than the FSB. Test question. A heat sink is a piece of copper or aluminum that sits between the processor and the CPU fan. It's usually built into the CPU fan. It pulls heat away from the CPU, and the fan disperses the heat. So this heat sink is not the fan, it's the piece of copper. When choosing a heat sink and CPU fan, make sure you get one that supports the correct slot type. If it doesn't, it's not going to interface correctly. You want to make sure it doesn't interfere with other components. You don't want a huge high heat sink that's going to take your cables out if you have a small case. And takes away enough heat for your environment. Look for one that says it will handle your type of CPU. For example, it's quad-core certified. You will also need case fans to cool the rest of the computer. When choosing case fans, consider case size. Larger cases often require larger fans because smaller fans cannot create enough airflow. Fan speed. Larger fans spin more slowly than smaller fans. And this will reduce fan noise. So you want bigger ones. The bigger the fan, the quieter it's actually going to be. The littler fans make the more noise. Think about the number of components in the case. Multiple components in computers create additional heat, which requires more fans. Larger fans or faster fans. Physical environment. The case fan must be able to disperse enough heat to keep the interior of the case cool. Number of mounting places available. Different cases have different numbers of mounting places for fans. Location of mounting places available. Different cases have different locations for mounting fans. Electrical connections. Some case fans are connected directly to the motherboard, while others are connected directly to the power supply. This is important. The direction of airflow created by all the fans in the case must work together to bring cool air in while moving the hotter air out. Installing a fan backwards or using fans with the incorrect size or speed for the case can cause the airflow to work against each other. That's really important, and I believe that's on your Module 11 test. So always make sure your fans are installed in the proper directions so that one fan is sucking the cool air in and the other fan is pushing the hot air out. Any questions on heat sinks, fans, any of that? Yep.
For the fan question, does would the case specifications or information with the case be the best, or what's the best way to tell what fans are compatible, or what's best to use in a particular situation?
Read the manual or manufacturer website of the case. Have a feel to see what mounting spots there are and how big a fan can fit in them. That's basically what I do.
There are actually cases that have got, if you look at some cases, they've actually got three sets of mounting holes for 80, 90 and 120 millimeter fans. No, sorry, I'm not converting that to Imperial. That's too hard. But you can obviously look at the case, and obviously if you've got the space to put 120mm fans in, then they will tend to be bigger and quieter and spin slower. So see what size the actual mounting hardware is. A lot of the case manuals, it used to be important to get exactly the right fans, but it's not so important these days, as most cases will take most fans, but the which way your fans are around and stuff is very important, so keep that in mind.
We might need to replace RAM when applications lock up or the computer has frequent errors. You may also want more RAM for various applications. Do we all know how to end a task in Windows Task Manager?
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't know, speak up. Okay, thought so. Alright, that's another way of getting back some memory. When choosing RAM, make sure it is compatible with the motherboard. When upgrading the RAM, you will need to find out the type of RAM, example DDR2, and the same speed or faster as the RAM already in the computer. Crucial and Kingston have RAM diagnostic tools on their websites to help you pick out RAM. Check on this, but if you use their tools and buy the RAM they recommend, they guarantee it will work with your system or they're going to take it back. Other companies may have this as well, so check around. If you get the wrong type of RAM, it won't fit. If you get slower RAM, it's going to slow your computer down and not do you a whole lot of good. Any questions on RAM?
Did anybody read Pranav's post to the mailing list about RAM?
That was very good, yeah.
Yeah, he occasionally posts little bits to the mailing list to show everybody how Cavi can be useful. So we hope you all enjoy those.
We like those.
Yeah.
We would much prefer it to the alternative that we could have.
Oh, absolutely. Hello, Melissa. How are you? Okay, no audio from you. Moving on to adapter cards or expansion cards, which are designed to provide extra functionality to your system. Answer these questions before buying adapter cards. Is there an open expansion slot? That's a really important one. You go and buy this awesome adapter card and you have nowhere to put it. That is annoying. Is the adapter card compatible with the open slot? Also annoying if it isn't. What are the customer's current and future needs? What are the possible configuration options? What are the reasons for the best choice. If there is no compatible slot, you may be able to get an external device, for example, a USB Wi-Fi card. You should also consider cost, warranty, and the brand reputation. Your graphics card can determine the performance of a computer more than you might think. This is because the tasks it performs can be quite RAM and CPU intensive. Things to consider include slot type, port types, amount and speed of video RAM, VRAM, graphics processing unit, GPU, maximum resolution frames per second, and those are very important, even if you don't use a graphics card. We never really thought much about our graphics cards until we decided we wanted to mine for bitcoins. Then we went through all of the graphics cards that we had in our storeroom, and we were just so annoyed because none of them were good enough for what we wanted to do with them. And it was just so funny being a blind person wanting a really impressive video card so you could do this mining.
It was needing.
Yeah, oh, I want to do this. And I don't have a great gaming graphics card. What a stupid thing for me to say. Any questions on adapter cards? Okay. Alrighty. A computer system must have the slots, RAM, and the CPU to support the full functionality of an upgraded graphics card, to receive all the benefits of the card. Make sure it meets the needs of the user. For us, try to get a video card with at least 256 megs of RAM. Honestly, I don't think you can get those anymore. Go 512, it won't hurt you. We don't need anything real fancy unless we're mining for bitcoins, but something with dedicated VRAM is nice.
Or if you want, you might want a good card if you really want to hook up your computer to your flat screen television, let's say. My friend is very lucky that he has low vision and has managed to, with the help of a friend, get the laptop through VGA actually displaying his Windows desktop on the gigantic 50-some-inch flat-screen TV that he has, and it takes up the entire screen.
So yeah, we know a blind guy that does that, too.
And you really want to do that? He also watches movies on it, too, and he says it looks good that way, too.
We have a blindy friend that does that, too. He doesn't see much at all, and he'll just put it on his big screen, apparently. He actually got workplace mods to buy him a 50-inch TV so that he could do this.
Oh my god.
Yeah. A storage controller is a... Sorry. A storage controller is a chip that can be integrated into the motherboard or an expansion card. You might... you might need a storage controller because on old machines, you didn't have SATA controllers. I had to buy a storage card once, and finding the drivers for that thing was unbelievably difficult. It took us like 2 weeks to, and we had to actually pull the storage card out, the storage controller out, bring it to someone so they could read the model number off, finally found the drivers we needed. But seriously, keep that driver city for the storage controller if you ever have to buy another one, because your hard drive doesn't work until you get those drivers on it.
I actually, there is a PCI identification utility that Chris Legg pointed me at that's really accessible, and it goes and looks up all the vendors and then tells you who made everything. Obviously, if you'd known about that, you wouldn't have had to pull the card out, but that's another way to do it as well.
Yeah, fair enough. Drives can be connected internally using IDE, SCSI, or SATA connectors. External drives can be connected using SCSI or eSATA, also USB. RAID controllers, one more time, can also provide speed and fault tolerance. That is what RAID does. Before you take your test, have a look at the final. Have a look at that RAID table, because I believe there are questions on RAID in the test. That's in Module 1. Am I right, Ali? Is there a RAID question still?
Yeah, it is.
Yep, it's there.
RAID 0 and RAID 1.
And what they do.
Yeah, they specifically ask about, or am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you can say exactly what they ask about. You just can't give the answer.
They ask about the disadvantage of Raid Zero, the main disadvantage.
Yeah, so you may want to have a look at that. And I sat there when I looked at that. I'm like, wow, that's a really good question. Because you don't really think about that much. Several factors to consider when purchasing a new storage controller card are slot type, drive type, connector quantity, connector location, card size, controller card RAM, yes they do have RAM, controller card processor, sometimes they can, RAID types, go study those, the amount of data, and level of data protection needed for the customers will influence the type of storage controller required. Choose the correct storage controller based on your customer's current and future needs. For example, if a customer wants to implement RAID 5, a RAID storage controller with at least 3 drives is needed. Any questions on storage cards? Yes, I know this chapter is long and boring. Don't fall asleep. Installing an I.O.
Nope.
card... Oh, good. Installing an I.O. card is a fast, easy way to get additional ports. What does I.O. stand for?
Input, output.
Yay! Firewire, USB, parallel, and serial ports are some of the most common ports to install on a computer. Factors to consider when purchasing an I.O. card are slot type, I.O. port type, I.O. port quantity, additional power requirements. You may upgrade. No, we'll stop there and see if anyone has any questions on I.O. ports. This is one of the more common upgrades you'll actually do. Because people need more ports, or faster ports. I want that nice USB 3 stuff they're all advertising. Okay. You may upgrade.
So everybody up to USB 3 now?
Yeah. Oh, Melissa, you sound sick.
Yeah, I've been sick and I've had company. Everybody just went home, so. Yep.
You may upgrade an NIC to get faster speed, more bandwidth, and better access. Factors to consider when purchasing an NIC include slot type, speed, connector type, connection type, standards, compatibility, wake on LAN, wired, and wireless. Any questions on those? NICs. Upgrading NICs. Fantastic! Go ahead, Lynn.
I have sort of a side question, but,
okay.
And I think I asked it before, and I don't think there was an answer, but, like, on the USB, the thing like the USB situation, where they're exactly the same USB 1 and USB 2 cables, is there any way you can, like, if I have, like, 50 USB cables, is there any way to, like, plug them into a port that you know is USB 2 and, like, test the speed to find out if it's a 1 or 2 cable?
Nope.
Get some cable ties and tie the cable ties around the 1 cables. Or just
right,
throw the
I don't
cables
know what
out.
But I already have them and don't know what they are. Like does it actually say on them somewhere?
I don't
or
think there is a difference physically between USB 1 and USB 2 cables. I know there are cables that are claiming to be USB 2 certified, but my way of doing...
No, it doesn't say anywhere, I don't think.
Not generally, unless they're trying to advertise it. I usually just plug a USB cable in, and if it doesn't work with my device, I switch it for another one. The quality of the cable isn't going to degrade the speed of the device, generally speaking, because it doesn't change the speed at which the electricity flows.
It's not like
Ethernet
cable.
I don't think it matters that much. I've never seen a USB 1 cable fail to work with a USB 2 device. Feel free to prove me wrong. But in all the years I've messed with USB, the version that the cable claims to be able to support isn't critically important in my experience. Somebody might be able to prove me wrong.
Never had an issue.
Well, that's nice, because here I'm thinking I have to, like, throw out all my cables to start fresh, because I have no idea what they are.
No, if it works, it works. And if it seems slow, and you have 50 of them, and you don't like the cable, or the cable doesn't seem to work up to your satisfaction, then you can pitch it. Okay. A capture card imports video into a computer and records it on a hard drive. Oh. In addition, a capture card with a TV tuner allows you to view and record TV. It can be an accessible DVR. Factors to consider when purchasing a capture card are slot type, resolution and frame rate, I/O ports, format standards. The computer system must have enough CPU processing power, adequate RAM, and a high-speed storage system to support the capture, recording, and editing demands of the customer. Funny, the one card they do not talk about here is a sound card. So
yeah, it's gone.
You do upgrade sound cards. Any question on adapter cards? Alright. You'll probably grow out of a storage device or have one fail at least once in your computer life. Who hasn't had this happen? Alright, that's everybody. You haven't? You've never had a hard drive fail or you've never needed a bigger one?
Nope.
Wow!
That's impressive.
I've needed... Yeah, you're very lucky. I've needed bigger hard drives. Every time, you know, I run out of space, you know, I need bigger hard drives, or I have had flash drives, I've had flash drives go kerplunk on me before.
I'm going to lob a hand grenade in here, but it's funny how people don't need gigantic hard drives if they've actually paid for all the music that they've purchased. There we go, just thought I'd put that out there.
That's true.
Hey. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. That would be me.
Good, good.
Yeah, I get all my music from Amazon whenever I can.
Alright. Signs that your storage device may be failing include unusual noises, unusual vibrations, error messages, corrupted data, or applications. If a floppy disk fails, replace it with the new technology, such as thumb drives, and come into the 21st century. This is an outdated technology, so very hard to find. A media reader is a device that reads and writes to different types of media cards, for example, those found in a digital camera, smartphone, or MP3 player. When choosing a media reader, make sure it supports the types and capacity cards that you need to read. These can also be internal or external devices. You may decide that you want to upgrade a hard drive for many reasons, including to install a second operating system, to provide additional storage space, to provide a faster hard drive, to hold the system swap file, to provide a backup for the original hard drive, to increase fault tolerance if you're doing RAID. If you're adding an additional IDE drive, you must make sure that one drive is jumpered for master and one for slave, or that they're both cable select. Most IDE drives are now cable select, but it pays to check. SATA drives each use their own cable, so they do not need to be configured as master or slave. Yay! Always plan out any necessary partitions or drives letters that will be added to your computer. That's basically it. We also talk about CD drives and adding new optical drives. You may need to do this because yours fails. These fail quite a bit, quite often, or you want that new awesome Blu-ray player. Make sure that it supports the formats that your customer needs to read and write. And that is basically what you need to do for a CD drive or DVD drive or that new Blu-ray drive. Alright, the last thing I want to talk to you guys about is upgrading the BIOS, because this is very important. There are some times when you'll need to upgrade the BIOS if you're tickling a strange bug with your motherboard, or if if you want a new processor or something of that nature. What you need to do is find out the manufacturer of your motherboard and the BIOS number. You can do this using BellArc Advisor. Yay, BellArc Advisor! And it'll tell you all the information you need about your BIOS. Then you're going to go and look up your BIOS information. Go to the website for your BIOS manufacturer and see if there's a new BIOS. Before you even think about upgrading the BIOS, read the README to make sure you know how to upgrade. A lot of them have swish little computer things that will do it for you. You just go into a program and it just does it. Some of them you have to boot off of thumb drives or CDs and you need a friendly sighted person. And some of the utilities are just not that accessible and you need a sighted person anyway. Any questions on the BIOS upgrades?
Does it say in there have a stable power source? Did you say that?
Oh, no, I didn't. I'm not even looking at my notes right now because I have finished reading what was in my notes. I'm just going off the top of my head. Oh yeah, do have a stable power source because if your power goes out, you may fry the entire motherboard. They're a little more fault tolerant now than they used to be, but you do want to make sure your power is stable.
Some of the Intel boards have a crash recovery option, some of the other boards have a dual BIOS, and some of them have a crash recovery option. But beware, some of the cheaper boards don't. And if you lose power in the middle of a BIOS upgrade, your system will not turn on ever again. And with some of the BIOS chips service mounted, you're out of options. It's new system board time.
Any questions? What's our chapter? Any questions on that chapter? It's basically a review. Okay, it's activity and quiz time. Sean, do you want to take attendance?
Give me just a second.
The disadvantages of wireless headphones. You may not be in front of your netbook, ready to press those arrow keys.
No, I was in another window.
Cavi will not be held responsible for any injuries you may incur by walking towards your netbook or switching windows. Thank you.
Where is?
Yeah, I can, let's see, where'd my notepad window go? I already had one up anyway.
Docs. Let's see. We've got a few customer servicey things.
Okay, that's really sad, Grace. I almost wrote your name down. That's going to be. Oh,
that's okay. Yes, I'm here.
No, Grace All is right. not here, man.
No. Okay. So, we have your favorite person, Sean. He has come back. We have Albert.
Oh, yay!
And Albert has a problem, guys.
I forgot about him.
Never met Albert.
Alfred, yes.
No. Was it Alfred or Albert?
It's Alfred.
Alfred.
Okay, oh, yes. Alfred.
Alfred has a problem, guys.
Yes.
The computer will not start up, and the computer beeps constantly. He's on Windows XP Pro. Computer will not boot. Customer does not know the manufacturer of the BIOS. Cannot identify the error from beep sequence. Customer did not hear any strange sounds from the computer. Customer does not smell smoke or burning electronics. Alright, so we've got to figure out what might be wrong. And I will read what the customer said to you. Oh, come on. Okay. Hold on, I'm just going to get my Braille display up.
Has anybody got any ideas as to what... are we waiting on Grace, or do we start accepting ideas?
We're waiting on Grace.
Oh, right.
We're waiting.
Scrolling?
No, the Braille display isn't even up. It's probably getting bidibidib.
Yeah, it's up now. Bidibidib. It's up. I'm just trying to write JAWS13. Because my Braille display and my USB system hate each other.
Aww.
It's unstable power funnies on an Alva 74 cell display. But it's such a good display that we don't complain too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
I've heard those are wonderful things.
They're really good.
Given she paid $100 for it, that's a pretty good display.
It was...
Holy mackerel. You got lucky.
I did. It is an awesome display. Alright, and this thing absolutely is refusing to come up, so... okay, so I work with computers all the time. I know how they work, so... But I don't know how my computer works. This morning was really slow, because I guess people are using more and more of those internet travel sites. So after my morning coffee, I decided to figure out what makes my computer work. I opened up the case and just started looking at the things inside. When I put everything back together, everything seemed to fit, and I didn't see any leftover parts. Now it doesn't work at all. It beeps at me all the time. Computer has no new hardware. He didn't put anything in it. Computer has not been moved recently. Except for the beeping, we didn't hear any other strange sounds. Computer looks the same as it did yesterday, as far as he knows. What did Alfred do?
I love this guy.
Disconnected his hard drive.
No.
Didn't rehook the cable or whatever, maybe.
No. We haven't
any
gotten
possibility
through post.
One of the cards is just not seated properly.
Yeah. He goes in on the video card, pulls out the video card, reseats the video card, that's fine. Still beeping at him.
Our problem.
Okay.
Our problem.
A RAM not seated? No, it's not a power problem, because it's booting. It's turning on. If it's a power problem, nothing would happen.
Could, like, the keyboard or something be plugged into the wrong port?
No, possibly. The RAM. Somebody said the RAM. And the RAM today is the correct answer. He goes in, unseats it, reseats it, and that thing works again. And hopefully tell him in a nice way not to go and take apart his computer again.
Please. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the line was something like, well, I know a lot about cars, so...
It was.
And I could open up my computer. Oh, you said it was. You said I know a lot about how computer. You kind of broke it. So
cars. Did I break it?
Because you said computers. You said
oh,
I know
I
a
meant
lot about
cars.
Computers, but no. The funny part was that he thinks, oh, I know a whole bunch about how a car works. So I'll just pop my computer.
Yeah, it
open.
Is.
It'll be exactly. Yeah. The same.
Oh, I screwed it up. Sorry.
You did kind of break it, but that's all right.
Aw, sorry.
The world goes on.
It does. I just love that picture though.
Alright, we are going to troubleshoot some hardware problems with a computer. I have come in and I have broken a computer, and it is everybody's job to try and fix it. I'll tell you what the issue... Okay. Okay, we've got many problems. You come up to the computer and you push the button and nothing happens.
Okay, is it plugged in?
No, it's not. Good job, Lynn. We plug it in.
Yeah, no, you're out.
Still, you're out.
Well,
nothing
she's out for the next
still.
One, yep.
Yeah.
Is everything plugged into the computer?
On the outside, let's see what we've got. On the outside, everything looks fine. You've got everything plugged in. The plug is in the wall. That's fine. But it still doesn't boot. Everything on the outside looks good.
Is it a desktop or a laptop?
You're out. You only get one question, Alex. Yeah, you can come back in soon.
He hasn't solved a problem. He can keep asking.
Oh, he can keep asking. I thought we were giving everybody a go at asking a question.
Anyone can ask a question, but he can keep asking. He hasn't solved anything yet.
Oh, because see, I thought the rule was that if you'd asked a question, you had to let somebody else have a go.
All right. Well, fair enough. We can do that.
We can do it that way.
It's a desktop. Anyone else have any questions or ideas?
Are there non-bootable media in a disk drive, in the optical disk drive in the computer?
Wrong question. It doesn't do anything when you press the button, so that would be irrelevant at the moment.
Could it be possible that...
Is there a switch on the power supply?
What? Yeah, the power supply switch is on.
Switch on the power supply?
That's on.
I was thinking about a voltage switch, actually.
That would go
like a dip switch
boom
for the voltage.
That's set correctly.
Not necessarily.
Yep, that's set correctly.
Is the PowerPoint on? Which is a valid question in Australia, but not in the US.
That's on.
Yeah, I was going to just ask, is the power strip on?
Yep, that's all on.
Keeping in mind that their whole outlets can turn off and on at the outlet.
Everything is fine on the outside for power.
Is the power supply bad?
Do you want to open up the case and look at it?
Yeah,
okay, so we open the case.
Chuck that screwdriver over this one.
Yep,
here we go.
First we unplug the power from the wall, of course. Turn that switch off. You open it up, you look at the power supply. The power supply is not plugged in to the motherboard. So, we gotta plug it into the motherboard. That big 24-pin connector is not in. Alright. Alright, so anything else you want to check inside the computer?
If its only problem is that it won't turn on, there shouldn't be.
Oh no, you've got about 5 or 6 problems. But if you want to, close the case and
so there is
turn
more.
It on.
Yeah, check any other loose
wires. Your case.
How about are there any other loose cables or
cables
aren't plugged in?
Your case fan was not plugged in. Neither was your hard drive power cable. So, that's helpful. Alright. Anything else
like
here?
The power supply was just set in the case and not hooked up to anything.
Since it seems like this computer is pretty much disassembled in its case, check that everything is seated and all the, you know,
you
the
RAM
and stuff is in there.
And you don't have a CPU.
Oof.
Oops. Okay. Yeah, you might want to.
What computer is this?
I don't know. So, you now have RAM. You now have CPU. You found those. They were sitting over on the desk somewhere. They are now installed. They are now seated properly. Let's see what else is wrong with it.
I know what happened. Right. We were actually working on one of the students' computers in at the Cavi lab, and we hadn't bothered to put it back together. That's how this all came about.
Yep.
We've done
anything
that too.
Anything else you want to check? Yeah, we have done that. Anything else that we want to check before we close up the case?
We're going to see other things you've heard about in this chapter today.
Is the fan on the right direction?
Yep. The fan is installed correctly. Both fans are actually installed correctly. Someone did do that right for you.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Seriously,
what about the adapter part?
All of them are good. All of them are good. They actually did install those for you.
Well, if this computer had all kinds of things unplugged from the power supply, is everything plugged into the motherboard?
Yep, it's all plugged in. They plugged all that in, but, yeah. Yep. Oh, that's good. You installed it. So, yes, you did that right.
Well, I'm thinking we probably try closing it up.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Let's close it. We close it. Screw it all together. Plug it in. Turn on the switch. Press the button. And it starts to boot.
Starts to boot.
It does boot. Possibly.
Yeah, notice how she
phrased that. There's no sound. You don't know if it boots or not. Because you don't hear anything when it boots up.
Oh.
Sound card problems, maybe.
Yeah. You might want to get someone over to have
Is
a look at the screen.
Is there anything plugged into it?
Yeah, you want to get someone to look at the screen to see if it's even booted up at all.
It is booted.
Oh, okay.
And it's got speakers on it, and they're working.
Yeah, it got speakers, everything. So you have sighted person over. What do you want them to check?
And can we go into the device manager and just check that the driver for the sound card is
Yeah. You go into device manager and it's disabled.
So you enable it.
And you have sound.
You want to try to think of the most simpler solutions first, and that would probably be to check your volume control, because some people probably do have it enabled in the device manager, but they might, you know, they actually, they probably have it muted, or, you know, something might have happened to their volume.
All right, final thing. You go to sit down, you're finally done, and you're going to browse the internet. And the page can't be found.
First, check to make sure you're not in offline mode in your browser.
Nope, you're online.
Somebody took down fanfiction.net to get blind people to be productive again?
What? Yeah, oh, fair. I gotcha.
Oh, wow.
You can check and see if you can connect, if you can see your, even see your router or whatever. Check and see what your network connections are. Settings are right, I guess, would be the next thing to check. See if you have the right DNS.
You don't have any network connections. You don't have a LAN connection.
Is this...
Do you have an Ethernet cable plugged in?
Yeah, it's plugged in.
And assuming your router is all plugged in, or however you...
Yeah, your router's fine. You got all the blinky lights on your router. The router's fine.
Is your ISP subscription paid and up to date?
Yep.
Thank you.
But you said you have no network connection.
You don't.
Well,
is
then
it
you
set
wouldn't
to automatically
have...
configure that connection? Is it set DHCP, or is it set to manually configure your IP?
We do an IP config slash all. You don't have any IP addresses. You don't have the LAN doesn't even show up. Like, when you do IP config slash all, there's no information on the LAN card.
Do you have a LAN card?
Do. It's plugged in. Yeah. Just go.
Yeah, we're just throwing them out now.
Is the network card, the network adapter enabled in Device Manager?
You look in Device Manager, and you don't have a network card in Device Manager. You do have an unknown device.
Could it be perhaps that the drivers for that network card are not installed?
No, they aren't. You might want to go get them. Good job. All right, you guys, you have a working computer. Congratulations. It's not as much fun as me actually coming and breaking a computer for you guys all to work on, but that's the best I can do.
Fun for who?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
I offer to break your computer all the time and you won't let me.
No, I won't.
I'm very kind, you know. I've offered to simulate dial-up on our home high-speed internet connection. She won't let me. I've offered to break her computer in interesting ways for her to fix it.
Like that either.
Yeah, no, she just doesn't go for that either.
Good.
I don't know why.
Good.
I was really having to stop myself from saying, oh, well, can you, you know, do you want to check the device manager for anything else while you're in there fixing the sound or whatever? Because my first thought was, well, you've already got the device manager cracked open anyway. Get your side.
Yeah, but they don't know what else is in this lab, so they can't really, anticipate anything else going. Next time, I'm sure they will.
Just me. But that wasn't me doing it from the lab. That's me doing it from... hey, wait, there's probably multiple things in this device manager.
Yeah, that thing's broken.
You know what's sort of nice is that, like, I feel a little more baffled by all the things that you might have to troubleshoot when it comes to software, but the hardware stuff doesn't feel complicated anymore. Like, it seems pretty much like, I'm sure there's stuff we can't even conceive of, but right now it seems, like, pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it kind of is. 10:49, we've got a quiz quickly.
I have actually had some really odd, dodgy hardware problems that have been absolutely incredibly difficult to track down. So the simple stuff tends to be easy, but watch out for the doozies. Sorry, go ahead, Gross.
Just for people who weren't here earlier, final is now available to be taken. Email me a time that you would like to take it, and we'll see what we can do. I have an ITE 1 chapter quiz. Alright, which two... which two causes can affect the correct flow of air and lead to a computer overheating? So choose two. Two case fans, one pulling and one pushing, yes or no?
Can we hear the question again, please?
Yep. Which two causes can affect the direct the correct flow of air and lead to a computer overheating? Choose two. Two case fans, one pulling and one pushing? No, that's what you want. You want one pulling in cool air and the other one pushing out hot air.
Hang on, what if they're pulling and pushing in the wrong direction, though?
Yeah, there is that. But that won't... that isn't necessarily always a bad thing. The other things are always a bad thing. Because pushing and pulling doesn't mean... It didn't say they were installed incorrectly, it just said the one was pushing and one was pulling, and that was bad. B, missing expansion slot cover. Oh, yes, it can. Because the fans aren't going to be able to do their work as easily. Because you now have another gaping hole in the case.
And dust gets in that way, too.
Yeah. Heatsink added to the Northbridge chipset. No. C, dust buildup around fans. Absolutely. Which activity increases the chance of computers becoming damaged due to ESD? A. Touching the metal case before working on a computer. B. Walking across a carpet or rug and then touching components. C. Using anti-static mats when working with components. Or D. Using non-magnetic tools when working on a computer. Choose now. Right. Good job. Which two devices should not be repaired when using anti-static devices? Choose two. A. Hard drive, yes or no.
Can you repeat the question?
Are not repairing with anti-static strips?
That is a no. B. Memory. That's a no. C. Modem.
No.
What's wrong? Monitor. Yes, absolutely. You don't want to repair that. Power supply. Yes. Alright. Computer components must be disposed of safely to meet federal and state standards. Which three dangerous components are in computers? A. Cadmium. B. Yep, yes, that's a yes. B. Carbon. No, because carbon isn't really dangerous. C. Hydrogen. No. Lead. Yes, absolutely. Mercury. Yes. And the last one, just for fun, was nitrogen, which we know isn't quite... Alright. A technician has been called and told that the computer has become louder and programs are slow to load. Which component is most likely beginning to fail? A. CPU. B. Hard drive. C. Memory. D. Floppy drive. Choose now. B. The good marble and paint tin sound.
If we'd been prepared, I actually have a sound for it usually.
Oh yeah, we didn't. While performing regular maintenance on a computer, a technician notices that the NIC is loose in an expansion slot. What is the proper course of action? A. Replace the NIC with a new card. B. Use thermal paste to secure the card in an expansion slot. C. Secure the adapter card in the expansion slot and tighten the retaining screw. I'm sorry. I'll read that over. I'll actually read the whole... all the choices ever. A. Replace the NIC with a new card. B. Use thermal paste to secure the card in the expansion slot. C. Secure the card in the expansion slot and tighten the screw. D. The slot is most likely damaged. Use a new slot if possible. Choose now. Correct. What determines the maximum amount of RAM that can be installed on a particular motherboard? A. Size of data bus. B, type of chipset. C, BIOS manufacturer. Or D, type of expansion slots available. Choose now. People who said B, you get a virtual lollipop, and probably some questions right on future quizzes. It is always the chipset that determines the amount of RAM and types of connectors that can be on a motherboard. Which I/O adapters would most likely be installed on a computer today? Choose two. A, DSP. B, FireWire. Yes. C, GPU. No, a GPU is a graphics processing unit, and it's not an I/O port. D, SCSI. No, not likely. An eUSB. Absolutely. What type of technology does a solid-state drive use? A, serial-attached RAM. B, spatial relational memory. C, static RAM. D, synchronous dynamic RAM. Choose now. C is absolutely right.
If it was D, guys, as soon as you powered your machine down, you'd lose all your data.
So what was C?
Static RAM.
Static RAM.
Which type of drive uses a 7-pin connector and is hot swappable? A, eSATA. B, Express Card. C, PATA. D, SCSI. Choose now. A is absolutely right. Good job, guys. What? I'm sorry?
That was A backslash.
Okay. All right. A technician troubleshoots a computer and realizes that this computer has power problems. What are three common causes of power problems? Choose three. A, failing CPU fan. No. B, loose connections. C, inadequate wattage. D, faulty power supply. Yep. E, CPU voltage set too high. And we have all of our three choices. On a Windows computer, the system information shows the wrong CPU speed. There is no jumper on the CPU or motherboard, and the BIOS is showing the wrong setting. What should we do? A, update the BIOS. B, configure the correct CPU. Sure. On a Windows computer, the system information is showing the wrong CPU speed. There's no jumper on the motherboard or CPU, and the BIOS is also showing the wrong CPU speed. What might we do? A, update the BIOS. B, configure the correct CPU model through Device Manager. C, upgrade the Windows operating system to the latest version. Or D, upgrade the motherboard to the bus speed that is suited to the processor. A is correct. You can try to update the BIOS because the BIOS looks like it also has the wrong setting. If that doesn't work, we're going to go for D. Okay, so your computer's 10/100 NIC that is integrated into the board no longer works. What can you do? A, replace the CMOS battery. B, update the motherboard BIOS. C, remove and reinstall the NIC driver. D, disable the NIC in the BIOS and use the FireWire port. C is absolutely right. When your computer starts, the floppy light is on and stays on. What can be the cause of the problem? A, the wrong power connection is attached to the floppy drive. B, the data cable is not connected, but the power cable is connected. C, the floppy disk drive is connected to the hard drive connector. Or D, the floppy disk data cable is connected incorrectly. He is absolutely correct.
Did you read the question and the answer?
You're reading really quickly, Grace. I know you're trying to get through fast. Yeah.
Okay, the question was, if you have a floppy drive that's light is always on when you start the computer, what may be the cause? And the cause is actually that the data cable has been put in backwards. So you have to go in and turn the data cable around so it'll work correctly.
And it can mangle your disks if you leave it that way.
It can erase the boot sector.
Yep.
It's the entire of track zero, so the file allocation table goes with it. It's worse than the boot sector.
It won't hurt your disk drive. Alright, everybody, we have gotten through module 11. Any questions?
I shall press stop.